Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. My name is Mike Havikin, and I am the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Good morning. Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And I should note Justice Frydenberg is recused from the first case, which is State versus Beaupree. And counsel, you may take your seats at counsel table. And do I understand, Ms. Tatum, you are going to argue, is that correct? Thank you very much. And Ms. Faust, you are also here. Do either counsel have any questions or any counsel have any questions before we begin? Very well. Ms. Tatum, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Sarah Shaw Tatum from the law firm Kirkland & Ellis on behalf of Jeff Beaupree. If I may, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
You may.
The issue before the court is very narrow, and it's whether the trial court should have held an evidentiary hearing on Mr. Beaupree's motion for a new trial based on newly discovered evidence.
What was it that the court actually did hold? Was that an evidentiary hearing?
No, Your Honor. The trial court did not hold an evidentiary hearing.
Exhibits received?
It did, Your Honor, but the court's opinion is very clear that it was dismissing the motion without holding an evidentiary hearing. I think that's in the first paragraph of the court's decision. My understanding is that it held what it called a records review and invited the state to participate because of the voluminous nature of the record and determined ultimately that an evidentiary hearing was not warranted. And again, I think it states that the trial court states that very clearly, I believe, in the first paragraph of its decision.
What have we said, if anything, about the appropriateness of a records review hearing with respect to a motion for new trial?
Your Honor, I don't know that this court has said anything, but the statute enacted in 2015 doesn't seem to contemplate on its face that there would be a records review hearing. I know that's the court has said in the context of post-conviction that there can be records review, but the 2015 statute is very clear. It enacted sort of a motion to dismiss standard where the court is directed in 29C102 to review the motion and supporting documents and determine whether, if true, the support materially affect the substantial rights, and only then serve notice on the state and invite the state to participate in an evidentiary hearing. So
you've not assigned error to this aspect.
We have not, Your Honor.
Procedural aspect. How should this court deal with the way that this was handled?
Well, we would ask this court to reverse and remand with directions to hold an evidentiary hearing, and if the court were to do that, it wouldn't need to reach the question, which I know there's a concurring opinion addressing this issue of whether or not the state should be invited under the plain language of the statute to participate at this stage. So, Your Honor, I think if you reverse and remand with directions to hold an evidentiary hearing, which is the relief that we're seeking, the court would need not address this issue. However, if the court does reach this issue, I think that the statutory language is very clear that the state should not participate at this initial stage. This is akin to a motion to dismiss. The statute very clearly directs the court to read the motion and supporting documents, presume that they are true, and if they are true, determine whether they materially affect the substantial rights of the movement. And I think, again,
did the court provide any direction about what the records review hearing was, what kind of materials it expected to receive?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe it provided clear clear direction on that. I think the trial court stated over trial court's objection that the state would be invited to participate because of the voluminous nature of the hearing, but there was no oral testimony. There was no...
Is there typically oral testimony in a motion for new trial?
At an evidentiary hearing, Your Honor? I believe so. That's certainly contemplated by the statute, which says affidavits, depositions, and oral testimony. I think a case that this court recently decided last fall, the Brown case, there was an evidentiary hearing there.
What additional evidence would be offered at a motion for new trial that was not offered here?
In our case, in particular, we would like to put Sheila Janice, Melissa Martinez, Renee Yellowboy, all of these women whose affidavits have gone forward and that the state has raised essentially a factual dispute about whether they're credible. They've never been heard before. No court has ever heard from these women. We would like to put them on the stand, and certainly the state would be able to cross-examine them. I think on the issue of diligence, the state's opposition again raises a factual dispute about the investigators' work in this case and whether they tried hard enough essentially to find Sheila Janice. That's the type of thing that I think is exactly what can be raised and explored in an evidentiary hearing.
Is there anything that would have precluded you from adducing that evidence at the hearing that was held?
My understanding is that there was not an opportunity to put on oral testimony, and the trial court very clearly stated in an email to counsel that she was having this sort of preliminary hearing to determine whether an evidentiary hearing was warranted. So I think the trial court was very clear about the scope of what she believed was at issue in these hearings.
What other type of evidence was offered for the motion? Was there affidavits? Were there depositions? Were there videos? Were there photographs? Were there...
In this case, Your Honor, there were affidavits, several affidavits. I think the centerpiece of this motion is Sheila Janice's affidavit, which...
But what other evidence was beyond the affidavits?
There were photographs offered. There was crime scene video offered. There were certain expert reports offered. And one of the things that the trial court took issue with, and one of the reasons that the trial court determined that this evidence wasn't... appropriate at this stage was that this type of evidence is not contemplated in the statute, which again refers explicitly to oral testimony, depositions, affidavits. But there's no reason to think that lawmakers intended for things like videos or photographs to be excluded. To the contrary, I think this court has said the only requirement in the requirement of affidavits is to ensure that the motion has some indicia of reliability, and certainly that's the case here where there's several affidavits that have been attached to the motion. I don't think there would be any reason.
How many affidavits were attached to the operative motion that is in our transcript?
I don't know the answer to that question.
If it's three, how does that compare to the number of affidavits that were offered at the records review hearing?
Your Honor, I don't think I understand your question. My understanding of the records review is that all of the affidavits that were attached to the motion for the new trial were submitted, attached to the motion for a new trial.
So if the transcript shows that the motion itself, the operative motion, was 153 pages, and it had about 348 pages of supporting documents, that's what's in our transcript. Assume my math is right. trust that, and I could be wrong. The exhibit that you offered at the records review hearing, which I understand was exhibit 589,
yes,
that you represented to the court that exhibit contained all of the supporting documents that had been filed along with the operative motion. That exhibit was 975 pages long. How do we reconcile that?
My understanding is that exhibit 589 is the motion, all of the exhibits that were attached to the motion for a new trial. And I'm not sure exactly procedurally why in the trial court that the motion and exhibits had to be introduced as a separate exhibit at the records hearing. But that's nonetheless what happened. My understanding is that the transcript, which is, my understanding is that these papers should have been in the transcript. But they were not, and out of an abundance of caution, trial counsel introduced the motion and all of its exhibits separately as an exhibit at the records hearing.
And some other stuff. In exhibit 589, the motion, the attachments to the motion, and some other stuff all went into 589. Is that correct?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, but my understanding is that 589 is all of the exhibits that were attached to the motion for the new
and
trial.
And does that include the, how do you say, Janice?
Janice, yes.
Affidavit about Yellow Boy?
That's correct.
Okay, and is that the most persuasive thing to which you would direct our attention?
Yes, Your Honor, and you went exactly where I was going. I just want to make clear that our position is the Janice affidavit alone merits an evidentiary hearing if the statute is properly applied.
Would that just be on Yellow Boy then? That would be that one theory, if you will.
That's correct, Your Honor.
It wouldn't photographs, it wouldn't go to...
Correct. All of that evidence, materiality is a holistic inquiry, and all of this evidence, again, undermines the conviction and gives us reason to think that there should be an evidentiary hearing, but our position is that the Janice affidavit alone, if you faithfully apply the language of the statute, which must be presumed true, merits an evidentiary hearing, and I think the Brown case, again, is our best case. This court just decided it there. The trial court did not even flinch before holding an evidentiary hearing. It's very similar facts. Someone came forward after the trial and was newly willing to provide testimony, and of course the court held an evidentiary hearing and ultimately determined that the woman was not credible, but here there was no such evidentiary hearing, and if it's okay with the court, I'd like to reserve what minor time I have left for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fox, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Stacey Faust, and I'm Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. We're here on Beaupre's third motion for new trial based on newly discovered evidence. Before getting into the specifics of Beaupre's claim, I would like to talk about the standards applied by the court in its analysis and also apparently what kind of hearing was held below. My understanding is that it was a records review hearing. That's what the district court called it. This court itself has said that in motions for new trial based on newly discovered evidence, we're going to look to post-conviction law for guidance, and that is what happens in post-conviction proceedings.
Sometimes happens in post-conviction. Doesn't have to happen.
Doesn't have to, but more often than not, it does.
And we bless that procedure?
Yes. Yes.
Have we, at the procedure, though, have we been very clear that nothing beyond the existing record is to come in at or to be presented to the court at a records review hearing in the post-conviction context?
Sure. It's the records of the prior proceedings to give the court guidance on where we've been.
And nothing else.
And nothing else. And because my understanding was the original motion for new trial and post-conviction along with all the exhibits and as well as the amended motion for trial had been filed, it was kind of part of the case records and files of this case. And so that it was, when although it was offered as exhibits, it was kind of part of the records review hearing. And you can also tell from the record that the system, the justice system, wouldn't accept all the exhibits because they're in color. It was too much for the system. It overloaded it. And so that is why I think the procedure was done the way it was done. And my understanding is that, yes, the exhibits are from the original, as with extras added from the amended, because things took place in between the times of the filing of the original motion for trial and the amended.
What do you mean extras?
There were photographs, I believe, that were that Beaupre has alleged were found and were scanned, made higher profile photographs, and so they those aren't proper forms of evidence anyway. So this court wouldn't be part of the analysis.
So by extra, you mean things that are not affidavits, depositions, or oral testimony?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And that's what I mean by extra exhibits added to the amended motion for new trial.
How do we reconcile the fact that there are three times the number of pages in Exhibit 589 as appear attached to the operative motion in the transcript?
Well, again, I think this is because the system wouldn't accept it, and there are hearings explaining that. Again, it was just my understanding that this was a records review hearing, and this was his motion, and these were the exhibits for it. That's all I can say on how to reconcile that.
what's the state's position with respect to pleading requirements? Here we have an operative motion that's 153 pages long and supporting documents in, you know, approaching 1,000 pages.
Yes.
Should this court, moving forward, articulate pleading requirements to narrow this down? And if so, what should they be?
Well, doesn't the statute specify that the pleading of a motion for new trial is to be in the language of statute?
Well, the motion is supporting documents. When you say in the language of the statute.
It would set forth whether it's irregularity, new evidence.
Oh, yes, the separate grounds. Yes, and as for the grounds for newly discovered evidence, it has to be supported by certain forms of evidence, that being affidavits, depositions, or oral testimony. And as this court said in State versus Hill, it doesn't matter the narrative set forth in the motion. It has to be supported in the documents, thus the correct forms of evidence that are considered. And those are what looked at or should be looked at by this court for the sufficient allegations. And
how does the Janus affidavit fit into that comment? It's testimonial, not demonstrative, right?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
What can the court properly look at, and in particular, the Janus affidavit?
The Janus affidavit is, under the statute, a proper form of the evidence. You can look at what she has said in there, but ultimately, it's the state's position that, or alternative position, that when you look at what she says in there, one of the timeliness requirements, the second timeliness requirements, is that it has to be, the information in her affidavit has to be so substantial that a different result may have occurred. And if it's not admissible, then that's not possible.
Could a move-ont attach exhibits other than those that fit into those categories to an affidavit? I mean, it's common where we would see an affidavit, person swearing to things, but then they also refer to other documents and say this is affixed as Exhibit A. In the state's view, is that permissible and something that can be considered exhibits to an affidavit?
I suppose if she's sworn to the truth and veracity of them, but not otherwise, no.
But here, the photographs and other materials you're referring to, those weren't referred to by an affidavit. They're just standalone exhibits.
They're just standalone exhibits. In fact, it took me a while, and I still honestly don't know if I do understand when I'm going through their investigators' belated due diligence affidavits, to understand what photographs they're talking about. Are you talking about the ones in 2008? Are you talking about the ones in 2009? I don't even know, because you haven't set forth which exact ones were discovered by who, when, and what they are.
Are you referring to the investigators' affidavits that were offered in support of the motion to alter or amend after the court decided to deny the evidentiary hearing?
Yes.
What should this court do with respect to those affidavits? Are they proper to consider in connection with the motion or not?
I thought about that. If the court had declined to consider them in support of the motion to alter or amend, I think it would have been within its discretion to do so. But because the court said that it considered them and it didn't change its position on the claims, I came to the conclusion I think I'm stuck, because I think it was within the court's discretion to consider the evidence.
Thank you.
What evidence did the state offer at the records hearing?
The records of all of Beaupre's prior proceedings. Or at least most of them. I mean, there's a lot.
And those were contained within the court file.
I'm sorry?
They were contained within the court file.
The state offered them as a separate exhibit.
But they came from the court file.
Yes, yes.
Could the court have looked at those even if the state had not offered them?
Yes, but because of Beaupre's voluminous, vast amount of past proceedings, The court even said it. It was looking for some help.
Narrow the issue.
Like, help me where I'm at on this. You know, as Justice Stacey pointed out, with the motion to deny, the motion to trial, and the differences in the amount of exhibits, and then you tack onto that all of Beaupre's prior proceedings and what was litigated and when, and it was looking for some guidance from the parties.
So did the court err by asking the state to come in and, at this stage of the proceedings and offer evidence?
No, because I don't think it was evidence by, I mean, I know it was offered as an exhibit, but it was a records review hearing, and the statute doesn't prohibit it. Just
the court's records.
Right, just like the post-conviction statute doesn't prohibit it. There's nothing that says this procedure can't be done.
Wasn't this more of an evidentiary hearing to decide whether to have an evidentiary hearing?
It could be, yes. It could be viewed that
way.
What
does that do to our standard of review? Because we have one standard of review when an evidentiary hearing is held and another when it's not. And I don't know where on that spectrum this case falls.
Well, I mean, I suppose the same could probably be said for post-convictions, right? I mean, you're determining whether or not to have an evidentiary hearing on the records. I think the records that the defendant, that Beaupre offered, were his filings for this case. If we should go on to have an actual evidentiary hearing, I think counsel is correct. That's when we're going to hear testimony from these individuals and the other exhibits.
Or possible receipt of affidavits with attachments?
Yes.
I mean, in that case, the affidavit's sort of the Trojan horse. It just brings in all the stuff attached.
Now, it's kind of like, at this stage, here's what we have. Here's what we might have to support our motion, or here's what we have. And then at the hearing, it's now prove it.
So is it the state's position that this should be reviewed de novo?
Yes, the standard is de novo.
So would foundation have to be laid for all the photos and videos and things of that nature have to be laid at that evidentiary hearing?
Yes, I think so. Yes, to show that.
So they just wouldn't come in because they're attached to an affidavit?
Not this stage. Unless, like I said, the veracity of them is sworn to, because the statute clearly lays that out. This court said this in Hill. There's only three forms. We're not looking at anything else at this stage.
Before you sit down, I have a question about the 2015 amendments to the new trial statute as it pertains to the timeliness.
Yes.
The time limitations. So in 2015, as I understand it, the legislature got rid of the three-year hard time limitation and substituted in its place a five-year limit unless two factors are satisfied.
Yes.
How are those two factors any different? What work do those two factors do that isn't already done by the two factors that you have to prove in order to get a new trial based on newly discovered evidence?
They're not.
So if it doesn't mean anything, what is our timeliness inquiry now?
Well, I think for me, timeliness, whether or not a motion is timely filed, is always going to be the first obstacle. I say that with the exception of my preclusion and law of the case arguments that I think actually precede that. But you proceed under the timeliness statute, the two requirements we're not under, obviously under the five-year here. If they are met, gets a hearing. The analysis would be one and the same.
Did that amendment, did the 2015 amendment have the effect of retroactively resurrecting motions for new trial that previously were time barred?
Yes, I think so. I thought about that as well. The court clearly applied the amendments despite Beaupre's allegations that it didn't understand the significance of them and so forth. The court applied the amendments here. This court applied the amendments in Cross, and the defendant's conviction predated the amendments there as well. And I think both this court and the district court were correct in doing so. Procedural amendments to statutes are applicable to pending cases no matter when the right accrued. Amendments that have remedial effect and do not impair vested rights also are applied retroactively. Substantive amendments are generally not retroactive unless specified by the legislature. I think the amendments to the motion for new trial statute are both procedural and remedial. Procedural because the amendments enlarged the time to file the motion and specified when to grant a hearing, and remedial because the whole point of the amendments was to ensure that wrongfully convicted defendants have the opportunity to prove their innocence.
there a constitutional issue with a statute that provides for resurrecting claims that had previously been barred?
I don't think so. Not with regards to, I think here we would be looking at the state's rights. And while finality is always a consideration and we're always going to press that, I think that
At least not a constitutional issue the state is raising here, then. Fair to say.
I don't know what it would be. I mean, when we're looking at it from a defendant's vantage point, like, for instance, in statutes of limitations, where it's already run, the statute of limit, the defendant had a vested right. And I don't know that the same can be said about the state.
So in the civil context, we have said that it would violate due process for the legislature to retroactively resurrect a claim that was time barred. Is it the state's position that that principle doesn't apply in the criminal context?
I think when you look at, I don't want to be that general as to the criminal context, but I think when you look at the purpose of the statute and the remedial effect of it, of what it was meant to do, and just the allowing the wrongfully convicted to prove their innocence, I think is going to trump that consideration. If there are no further questions, I would just like to, I guess I'll submit on the claims, my position on the claims on brief, and I'll just close with the statement that actually, you know, with having said that about the statute and the wrongfully convicted, that this case, though, isn't about an innocent man who has lost an opportunity to be heard. No, he's been heard multiple times. We're up here, I think, on Beaupre 8 now. And in fact, this case is about a litigious defendant who simply just cannot accept the finality of his convictions. And we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 32 seconds.
32 seconds. Ms. Tatum, we will give you 1 minute and 32 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple points. I'd like to address Justice Stacey's question about the discrepancy between the 589 and the transcript. I think it's just an error, and that's why trial counsel introduced the full exhibits at the record hearing to make sure they were all in the record. Now that I understand your question, that I think the discrepancy is truly just an error. I also want to get to your question about timeliness. The timeliness bar has a higher standard in the materiality than the substantive standard in the new trial provision. There's may lead to a different result. It's higher than substantially affect material rights. So there is a small difference there. It's not entirely redundant. But our position is that the timeliness bar is a threshold question. But again, the language of that statute says that you look at the motion only. So you have to make a prima facie showing of diligence and materiality. And if you make that prima facie showing on your motion, again, the language of the statute, you go to the question of whether you get an evidentiary hearing. And here, the reasons that we've said, we have made that prima facie showing of diligence and materiality. The state and the trial court don't really have an answer on the Janice affidavit other than to raise factual disputes. And the trial court said it was uncorroborated, which is just facially not true if you look at the other affidavits in our motion. And then I'd like to close by getting to this issue of the pleading standard that Your Honor asked about. The statute is clear. It tells the court what the pleading standard is. It's like a motion to dismiss. You have to look at the documents, presume that they are true, and if true, determine whether they affect the material, substantially affect the material rights. And the court lacks discretion, must hold an evidentiary hearing, and issue findings of fact and conclusions law, which include credibility determinations. That's what Nebraska lawmakers enacted in 2015. It was a compromise, and that's what the court was bound to apply below, and what it did not even cite. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in State versus Beaupre. Counsel, thank you.